We'll convene this meeting of the Finance and Capital Committee. Hopefully by the time we get through with the introductory items, Mr. McMillan will have joined us. So today, our actions are to first approve the agenda for the meeting, which will include consideration of the minutes. Then we will also have a quarterly update on the capital plan as an information item, and then one action item on the heavy repair and overall facility public hearing, staff report, and mass transit plan amendment. Can I get a motion to approve the agenda? Moved by Mr. Price. Is there a second? Mr. Goldman, thank you. All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? The agenda is approved. Let's also look at consideration of the minutes from March 14th. Hopefully you've had a chance to review. Can we get a motion to approve? Moved by Mr. Goldman, seconded by Mr. Price. All in favor? Aye. And none opposed. The minutes are approved. So for today, our agenda will include the progress of Metro's capital projects and planned capital investments, which reflect the ramp-up in anticipation of dedicated capital funding and improved program management. Tom Webster will also highlight the ongoing activities to enhance both Metro's capital programming and planning capabilities. And next, as I mentioned, the staff will present a report for the committee to consider the public hearing on the proposed new railcar maintenance and overhaul facility. We will be asked to do several things, approving the staff report, selecting the preferred alternative, and to delegate to the GM CEO the authority to negotiate and acquire property for the project. So I'll now turn the floor over to Mr. Tom Webster for our first item.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to present an update on Metro's capital program this morning. Through our capital program, Metro is improving system safety, service reliability, and financial stability. Increased capital investment is reducing Metro's backlog of safety and state of good repair needs. Since FY 2015, Metro has doubled our annual capital reinvestment rate from $700 million to more than $1.4 billion. Looking forward, we will continue to invest capital funding responsibly and proactively plan to address replacement, rehabilitation, and improvement needs. For capital planning and program development, Metro estimates the approximate value of assets that require investment that are already past useful life and that, based on their deteriorated condition, have the potential to negatively impact safety, service reliability, and or the operating budget. Between 2016 and 2018, Metro's estimated state of good repair backlog decreased by about $2 billion, from $7 billion to $5 billion. Capital investments in new rail cars, the Safe Track program, track rehabilitation, track renewal projects are the major contributors to both Metro's safety and reliability improvements and to this state of good repair backlog reduction. Metro's facility stations and systems continue to age, and investments made over the past few years and improvements were not enough to address the growing need for reinvestment and to reduce the net state of good repair backlog in those assets. Over the next 6 years, Metro will continue to invest in vehicles and track, but also will replace some of our oldest and obsolete facilities, including Northern and Bladensburg bus garages, this headquarters building through the office consolidation program, and will focus investment on stations and systems to improve safety and reliability. Over the past 5 years, Metro invested about $5 billion through the capital program, about $1 billion per year on average, including substantial investment in new rail cars, buses, and track. In March, the board approved the FY 2020 to 2025 six-year $9.2 billion capital program. The six-year plan invests heavily in programs and projects that will improve safety and reliability, further reduce that state of good repair backlog, and proactively keep up with ongoing life cycle preservation, rehabilitation, replacement, and improvement needs. And over the next 6 years, Metro's capital investments will shift more towards high-priority systems and facility and station needs. Metrorail stations are the focus of significant current and planned capital investment this year, next fiscal year, and over the six-year period. This morning we will highlight five programs among many that will improve the stations, including platforms, lighting, cooling, elevators and escalators, and station entrance canopies. These programs improve safety and service reliability for customers, reduce the backlog, proactively reinvest in assets on life cycle schedules, advance Metro's energy action plan, and reduce future maintenance and operating costs. And more than $1 billion will be invested in these five programs we'll highlight this morning over the next 6 years. About half of Metro's 91 stations have outdoor platforms that are exposed to weather and de-icing agents during the winter. Concrete platforms deteriorate over time. Inspections of 20 stations confirm that reconstruction is required for safety and to improve accessibility for customers. Over the next 3 years, Metro will reconstruct these 20 platforms, including six this summer, and to expedite the reconstruction and minimize extended impacts for customers, Metro will close the stations and will concurrently complete other station, track, bridge, and systems projects in the closed parts of the system to minimize future disruptions to service for those stations. Metro has also has old and obsolete lights throughout the system that don't generate enough light and do it very inefficiently. Metro began programs to replace lighting in stations, as well as in tunnels and facilities, to replace lights with brighter and much more efficient LED systems. Those projects ahead of schedule, and underground station and tunnel lighting installation is expected to be complete by 2021. Station cooling, Metro cools underground stations with a system of chillers, air conditioning units, cooling towers, ducts, and piping. Several years ago, Metro established a program and began replacing obsolete station cooling assets with modern systems that are safer, more reliable, energy efficient, and less costly to maintain. After years of catch-up work, the station cooling program is beginning to transition to life cycle rehabilitation and replacement, where we'll address assets on a scheduled basis. Metro has nearly 1,000 elevators and escalators across all of our stations and facilities. Our elevator and escalator rehabilitation and replacement programs improve the safety and reliability of the equipment as it ages and wears with use. Substantial reinvestment and elevators and escalators over the past several years has helped keep them in service for customers and reduce the backlog of needs. Ongoing life cycle replacement will be required to continue to meet or exceed our performance targets. And finally, in station entrance canopies, in the early 2000s, Metro began installing canopies over escalator entrances to stations. The purpose of these canopies is to cover escalators and customers from weather, improve escalator reliability and the longevity of the equipment, and reduce customer slips and falls. Covering outdoor escalators is also now required by building codes. Escalator canopies also provide a recognizable symbol for customers as they approach our stations, and the canopy program will continue for the next few years with installations planned to cover the remaining uncovered escalators across the system. Once that installation is complete, the program will shift to ongoing scheduled life cycle rehabilitation and replacement. On to a brief update on the FY19 current year capital budget. Through March, Metro invested $1 billion in the capital program so far this fiscal year. We expect that that accelerated investment rate will continue through the fourth quarter, and total investment in FY19 will approach $1.5 billion. That concludes the presentation. Happy to take any questions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Webster. We'll do questions without prioritizing who's on the committee and who's not for this information item. I'd like to start us off. If we go back to slide 3 in your presentation, Mr. Webster. So the state of good repair backlog, this is a very useful graphic. However, what it doesn't necessarily tell me is the prioritization within these specific categories. So, for example, as we look at systems, an area where we haven't necessarily made as much progress in some of the other areas. The same is true for facilities where we've slid back a little bit. Can you give us a sense of what are the priority areas of focus within those different categories?
I'll take systems as an example.
Okay.
So we have power and train control systems that are and will be a focus of the six-year program going forward. Those are high-priority systems projects.
Is there a way that you can give us some materials that actually show those levels of priority?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
So we will this summer be releasing a capital needs forecast document that details the relative priority of the different needs.
Okay. And if we can go to your next slide. So I'm also looking to figure out how we also utilize this very important and useful information. So, for example, we see the relative share of capital investment that's planned for those categories. But how should we as a governing body ascertain whether or not, for example, the amount that we're going to be spending in facilities is enough given whatever priority list that you produce to actually make substantial progress towards reducing the backlog? Same thing with systems. The share is increasing, but is that increase enough? So what kind of data will you provide that will help us make those decisions?
So the document, the publication I referenced,
yeah,
will begin to detail that.
Okay.
I think as you move from the needs forecast to the capital program projects, you're also looking at the time that the investment happens, so the project schedules for delivery. So as an example, a high priority project may take longer, so that's also embedded in these programming figures.
Okay.
But we'll provide some additional detail and we can have a subsequent discussion.
At some point, I think it will be useful for us all to be thinking at that level in terms of making these governing decisions, because as useful it is, getting this report out doesn't really give us much room to delivering meaningful input. All right, questions, comments, Mr. Goldman.
Thank you. We can just stay on this slide right here. On the pie chart on the right-hand side, Tom, you've given us a good deal of information on one of the slices, the stations slice, kind of blue at the bottom. But there's actually two slices that are much bigger than the station slice, and that's the vehicle slice, which I've been filibustering some more. So the vehicle slice, which at 28%, works out to about, my math had about $2.58 billion, and the systems slice, which works out to about $2 billion. And you indicate some of the specific projects that are in those sort of pies, but could you provide a little more details, say for under the vehicles, how much of that $2.58 billion is still for the 7,000 series rail cars? How much of it is being set aside for the 8,000 rail cars, buses, and you know, the other projects that are included there? Well, no, because it's a longer period, so this will just be a slice of what he's got there.
Additional detail on what makes up the capital program by category, we can absolutely provide that. The 7,000 series procurement, as an example, is was a featured project of the past 5 years. It begins to move to close out early in the next six-year period. But we can provide the detail of the major programs that are in each category.
How do you want to do that? Because I've gotten these questions from some of the jurisdictions as well as to what's sort of included in these pie slices for the six-year period by project or program rather than in the just as a broad asset category.
So there'll be a few documents that do this. Our budget publication will have details by program. We can also provide projects by category as a separate.
That's something you can do in the next 30 or 60 days?
Yes.
Let us do it that way?
Yes.
Thank you. That'd be appreciated. For all the slices of pie, if you could. Just moving on, Sean, you showed us your, I guess, on stations, some of the project details for five of these projects, and they total about $1.2 billion of the total $9.2 billion. I guess I'm curious, did you focus on stations today just because we're about to go into the platform rehabilitation project at the end of the month, or is there some other message that you're trying to give us by focusing just on stations and projects dealing with stations?
So the relative share of our investment in station projects and programs increases dramatically in FY20. It's our largest category of investment in our FY20 capital budget. So in detailing out some of the major projects and key highlights, it seemed appropriate to focus on the major projects in that category today.
But as part of the overall six-year program, I mean, the $1.2 billion is, I guess, about 10-15% of the $9.2 billion. Right? So, I mean, it'd be good to get a shape of some of these other projects, as we said before, rather than just focusing on the stations as... I don't want to say a relatively minor because it's going to have a big impact on travelers for the next 3 months or so. But I think it would be helpful if you're going to do reports like this periodically that we get some information on, some broader information on things like vehicles and the systems as well as on stations.
I think that's useful, Mr. Goldman. All the information that we're requesting that you and I both surfaced, I think we'll get to that. I think it's certainly reasonable that given this quarterly update, we would focus on what we're going to be spending the most money on in the near future. So I think that works. All right. Mr. Smedberg?
Yeah, I thank you, Mr. Dorsey. Mr. Webster, I just want to say I think Mr. Dorsey made an important point about that this slide here and having some of the background and how we got to these percentages would be really helpful, as he said, as the governing body and particularly for the Finance Committee members. So thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Horner.
I have a boring question, but I'll preface it with a compliment to management and a message of encouragement. I think it's marvelous that you continue the program of installation and upkeep of the canopies that cover the escalators. The canopies are evocative of the Paris Metro, and I think it's a nice aesthetic salute to Pierre L'Enfant, who developed the layout of Washington, D.C., a Frenchman, for those who didn't figure that out. So I think it's marvelous and iconic, and I think in due course people will associate these canopies or the system of these canopies. It's a form of civic art that is probably widely appreciated by the public. Now, the boring question is, can you please describe how you are contracting for the delivery of the major works contemplated by this program? Are you segmenting rehabilitation and construction activities from O&M functions that would follow with respect to those assets? Are you using a single long-term contract to undertake these works? Could you just, in broad strokes, sketch for us the contracting approach for delivery of this program of works?
So for these five key programs, they are largely RFP construction contracts, and our approach is, as I described with the platform program, to try to bundle and consolidate as much work that's geographically close to the primary driver of the project, to limit the future disruption to have to go back and do similar work. In terms of future O&M, most of these projects are defined construction. At the end of the project, the construction contract is closed, and O&M is handled by a subsequent.
Generally, as a matter of risk allocation, do we bear the risk of interface between the construction contractor and the O&M provider who comes in behind the contractor? Who's taking that risk? How are we covering it off? Warranties?
Well, to the extent that those contracts are broken up, obviously the agency, in this case, one of them, has that risk. But going forward, we are looking much, much broadly, or much more broadly in terms of packaging some of these projects in terms of both construction and maintenance. And I believe one of the projects you're going to be hearing about later is at least headed in that direction. Whether or not we'll end there, obviously, is still an open question.
In conclusion, I would point you to you should track a major rehabilitation contract being staged for procurement by the University of Iowa. It's not a transit asset, but it is it's a cutting edge method of procuring rehabilitation of large scale assets in a way that addresses some of the risks I've described earlier. We'd be happy to talk to you about it offline later.
Thanks, Mr. Horner.
If I could, the other thing is, A, we're not locked into doing business one way. Monitor what's happening in the marketplace too, particularly in this current marketplace, which is extremely tough. So how we package projects is really driven. A part of it is by the market.
Mm-hmm.
So like the platform work was driven. A lot of that was done for that purpose. The scale of that to get the type of contractors we need to tackle a big project like that.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Crawford.
Good morning. I support, thank you, Mr. Dorsey. I support the questions that were raised by my colleagues. I'd just like to just speak briefly, just an observation. It wasn't that long ago that I actually went out of my way to avoid Metro. I would come downtown and there would be a disruption. Then I have to figure out how to get around. So I purposely went out of my way to avoid taking Metro. That's no longer the case. When I'm traveling, one of the first things that I now think about is, can I actually use Metro to get there? So I want to compliment you on that. I want you to continue to stay focused on the preventive maintenance program. And, you know, in one of the conversations we had earlier this year around preventive maintenance hours and things of that nature going into the future, really continue to urge you with the 2021 budget to really focus on efficiencies, lessons learned, completed backlog, to just make sure that wherever we can, we have as efficient as possible a maintenance program, and if there's a way to give back a few hours to service without jeopardizing safety and reliability, do that. Again, very, very nicely done in a relatively short period of time. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you so much. Any other questions, comments on this item? To close this out, I think what I'm hearing from everybody is we're all thrilled at the progress. I think the feedback I certainly received from people in the community certainly indicates that this is having an impact on the riding-facing public and understanding that these are moving Metro forward, so we thank you for that. And we've surfaced a few things, which I'll just work with you on offline in terms of reporting so that we can better tell that story to people who are interested, because it's kind of great. People are interested because they want to be their cheerleaders again, not because they want to ding us. So I think it's wise of us to all have all the information we need to tell the story. Why don't we move to the next item, which is the rail heavy overhaul and repair facility. Mr. Thomas? Mr. Ash. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Ash. Jim Ash, I'm Senior Program Manager. I'm appearing today on behalf of John Thomas, Chief Engineer. I'm here to seek the committee's concurrence and approval for construction of a heavy repair and overhaul facility. Specifically, we're looking for committee concurrence on the selection of the preferred alternative, amending the adopted regional system, and delegating authority to the general manager to negotiate and acquire properties necessary for the project. By way of background, our daily and our heavy maintenance activities for our rail fleet occur at Greenbelt Yard and at Brentwood Yard. A recent rail study concluded that there was limited space to perform the heavy maintenance activities and the daily maintenance activities, and that they end up competing with each other. Additionally, rail storage yards were designed to store rail cars in two packs rather than the quads that we are now constructing and putting into service. A new facility then will consolidate the heavy maintenance activities at a single location, thereby freeing up maintenance capacity and storage capacity at the two yards. The entire region was looked at for identification of a new yard facility. I should also add that a categorical exclusion, this is the federal approval, documentation was prepared and submitted to FTA. I learned last night at 6:15 that that document has been approved by FTA, so that's good news. The WMATA compact requires a public hearing for changes to the mass transit plan. The public hearing was held March 18th. One person testified. During the public comment period, we received about 50 comments, 26 of those expressed support for the project. Three of those comments were focused on the 8,000 series railcar contract. The remaining comments focused on business displacement issues, noise issues, vibration issues, and the like. The final public hearing staff report then addresses all of those comments. Staff recommendation then is to construct a new heavy repair and overhaul facility at a location on Pensy Drive, west of the New Carrollton Station. The project elements will include a facility for heavy maintenance, a facility for maintenance of our maintenance of way vehicles, the so-called yellow fleet, a parking deck for employees, and the associated rail infrastructure necessary to make the yard work. The diagram is shown here. To construct this facility, we will need to acquire three properties. Of those three properties, two have warehouses, which will have businesses that will need to be relocated. The properties are valued at more than $1 million. That means we require board approval for the procurement. Staff requests that the board delegate to the general manager authority to negotiate and acquire those properties.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, good. Mr. Member.
Jim, just a point of information. Is that $1 million for the two properties or $1 million each?
No, they're not valued at $1 million.
Oh.
It's just
that's what I was wondering. Okay.
I'm glad you corrected that because we don't want that reported that these are only $1 million.
Okay.
So with that clarification, staff recommends approval of the public hearing staff report, selection of the preferred alternative, amendment of the adopted regional system to incorporate a new heavy repair and overhaul facility, and a delegation of authority to the general manager to acquire the properties necessary for the action.
And just to be clear, I would have to come back to the board for final approval for any sale or any purchase.
Yeah, sorry, I just heard it wrong. That's all.
No problem. That concludes the presentation, Mr. Ash.
I'd be happy to answer questions.
All right, I'm sure we'll have a few. I want to start off with just because we probably want to explain to the wider world, since this is counterintuitive and contra best practices, why are we outlining our intent to purchase property before we've negotiated the terms of purchase? Typically, those would be, done not in the public sphere, and then we'd consider the actions once those deals had been negotiated.
The procurement of the properties will have to be done in accordance with the federal regulations. As part of the environmental process, we have to identify the properties and identify the properties that are likely to be acquired for this, so that needs to be done in the public realm. The negotiation of the actual prices and the other terms will be done in accordance with the federal procurement regulations.
But it would be our intent, certainly, that we'd seek the best deal for WMATA possible and, not necessarily go above appraised value. It's not our intent to drive it up.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Other questions? Mr. Goldman.
Thank you. Appreciate your report. You said something very critical in your presentation that I just want to focus on in for you to explain to the other board members and the public at large. You talked about the difference between historically doing vehicle maintenance in two-packs versus quads. You want to just explain that in a little more detail and why that's so important to WMATA Rail going forward?
Sure. So if you perhaps the simplest way to look at it is if you have a rail storage track that's designed to accommodate six cars, and that means that you can only put in, and you've got a four-pack that's...
Please explain what a four-pack is.
Thank you.
It's not just some beer, right, that you buy at the package store, right?
Four-pack.
Where are you shopping?
Yeah, we are.
I'm not sure I've seen a four-pack for sale, but I'll have to go check. So when the original rail car fleet was put together, cars were designed to be operated in pairs or two packs. With the advent of the newer contracts, we now procure cars in four packs, which means the minimum unit that you can store in a yard is four cars. If you have a track that's set, that's able to accommodate six cars, that you really can only put in, and you're operating with four-car trains, you can only put one unit in that location, and the other two spaces then are wasted. There's an inefficiency associated with that. And the idea is that if we can move a lot of our heavy repair storage activities to a new location, then that frees up that track for the daily maintenance activities. We're separating competing functions.
But for riders, this essentially means that for the 7,000 series, you can either operate those trains in four-car trains or eight-car trains. There's no ability to operate the 7,000s in six-car trains.
That's correct, yes.
And as we move forward with replacing the 2,000 and 3,000 series with a new 8,000 series, I assume it will have the same requirement to be four packs.
That's correct,
so we
yes.
will increasingly be going to a system with all eight-car trains. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you. Second question, just real quickly, and you may not know the answer, but since Mr. Webster is here, he'll help you along. The cost of the acquisition for the heavy rail facility, is that under the vehicles segment of the budget, that slice, or is that under the facilities slice?
So within the capital program, it's within the vehicles investment category. Within the this facility is a new facility, so it's not in the backlog slides that I showed previously. It is a facility capital need that's in our, I'm sorry, this is a little confusing, in our investment category of vehicles because it supports vehicles.
Okay, so it's in the 28% vehicle slice of pie for the six-year period.
I'm sorry. That previous slide was our capital needs by asset type, which is different than our capital program structure. We're moving to have those things mirror each other, but today they're categorized separately.
Okay. But for purposes of our explanation, which pie slice from your prior set of files is the heavy rail facility funded in?
In those pie slices are it is in the facilities.
It's in the facilities at the bottom. Right. But it is, I guess that just was bottom line principle I wanted to fund. It is funded already and included in the six-year capital budget.
Some elements of those are in the six-year capital budget, obviously as we go through both the land acquisition as well as the actual contracting process, the numbers are expected to change.
And then is this a project that will be completed in this six-year capital budget, or is this likely to take a longer timeline to be completed and open?
So our plan is to have the project completed by December of 2023. WMATA is adopting a scheduled maintenance system for its rail car vehicles, and the thought is that we will have the facility complete and open in order to accommodate the first scheduled maintenance for the 7,000 series rail cars.
Right. So the bottom line is we may need some playing around with the capital budget in the out years to fully fund the heavy rail facility, correct? Thank you.
Okay. Other questions?
Just
Mr. Crawford?
Just want to just go on record that Prince George's County looks forward to the launch of this heavy rail facility in the future. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Now would be in order for a motion from a member of the committee to go ahead and approve the three items under this particular section, which is accepting the staff report on the recent public hearing on the new maintenance and overall facility, selecting the preferred alternative as discussed, and delegating to the CEO the authority to negotiate and acquire property for the contract. So moved by Mr. Price, seconded by Mr. Goldman.
Correct.
All in favor? Aye. None opposed. So that is the recommendation of this committee. I should note that this will be immediately on the agenda for the board meeting that will follow. That is not our intended usual best practice, but due to scheduling this month, this item was pushed back from 2 weeks ago. So this is an exception that we hope is going to be a rare one, where the committee is considering something that will immediately then be considered by the board. Given that the recommendation proceeded from this committee as designed, it seems appropriate in this manner, but we do not hope to make this a regular occurrence. All right. With that, there's no other business before the committee. We stand adjourned. Board meeting is at 10 o'clock, correct, Mr. Evans? Thank you.